Welcome to the podcast. My name is Danny Cola. Thank you so much for tuning in. In this episode, I interview heavy club, steel mace, and kettlebell coach Mark Wildman and steel mace, kettlebell club coach slash video guy slash bartender Gareth Ham, and he also goes by G-Money Mustache. We recorded this episode in Viesta, Italy, in our Airbnb, and we were just sitting at the table, shooting the shit, talking a little bit about history, religion, spirituality, meditation, and we kind of tie it back to strength training, kettlebells, clubs, landmine, etc. So this was a very fun conversation. I really got to know these guys over the course of the 5 days that we were in Viesta at the Human Fit Project retreat. It was an amazing time, and I look forward to more moments and more conversations like this. So enjoy the podcast. Make sure to follow Mark Wildman on YouTube. He's got an amazing YouTube channel where he coaches you up on clubs, maces, kettlebells, mobility. And that's at Mark Wildman, Wildman Athletica. You can also check out his Instagram at Mark Wildman. Follow Gareth Ham on Instagram at G-Money Mustache. He's always coming out with some fun, crazy videos and interesting content to share. Without further ado, here's the episode. Enjoy the podcast. Share it with somebody that you love.
See, Speed Force Vector.
We talked about Speed Force Vector on the first podcast that we did.
Nice.
I didn't know that you guys had a boy band group named Speed Force Vector.
And hang out with silly
named
boys.
Ourselves. Didn't we make a GIF, a picture of Speed Force Vector?
It's the red triangle in your emojis.
Yeah. Is it you? Is it the G-Money Mustache, Mark Wildman, and Will Safford?
Yeah.
Okay.
But you can be in here, too. You'll be the center of the triangle.
It sounds good. Heart, right? You have to fill it with something.
I'm the heart.
Captain Planet. You'll be like the ring that says heart on it.
I love it.
Where he goes, heart.
Yeah, I used to love Captain Planet. It was so weird. That superhero was such a weird fucking kid.
Such a weird. Did you ever see the Don Cheadle Captain Planet?
No.
They did this. Was it Funny or Die? They did Captain Planet, and he starts killing everybody by turning them all into trees. It's amazing. Captain Planet becomes the great evil, and he kills all the humans and turns them into trees. And it's all that the birds had actually tricked him into doing it so that the humans would be gone, and then they kill him at the end, I think. It's brilliant.
That sounds just slightly weirder than the original.
I know, but...
But at the end of the day, I'm glad to be a part of the fucking... What is it called again?
Speed Force Vector.
Speed Force Vector. It's definitely been a very fun time here on this journey in Viesta, just joking around, having drinks, doing exercises, hanging out in the house. I think it's important for everyone to do something like this. I know we talked about that in the last podcast.
I'll talk about it forever.
But I'm really, really enjoying my time. I think you guys are really cool guys, and I'm learning so much and just having a really fun, and a lot of this has been unexpected too, like just the party we had last night.
Absolutely.
That was so fun, playing guitar and singing, and everyone singing along. That was completely unexpected.
Well, I mean, who was playing the guitar? You were playing the guitar.
I was playing the guitar.
Like an absolute musician. And that's why you're allowed in the center of the triangle. We have nobody to do these kinds of things.
Yeah, that was fun.
I'm just like general anger and math, right?
Mm-hmm.
What Will Safford is community leading, community organization. He knows everybody, right? And G Money is the guy who can get anything done.
That's true.
That's very interesting. All of us are very different but also similar and complement one another.
No, absolutely.
It's fun.
It's been a very special time, especially being here and meeting you. When I walked in the building, and I knew Will and Mark were here.
Talk in the front of it.
I'm sorry.
No. Like, right there.
Like this.
Yeah, right there.
No, that makes sense. Yeah, I walked in and I was like, "Who's on the bed in the corner?" They're like, "Oh, Danny Cola." I was like, "All right, this is gonna go well."
You could see Gareth was like, "Why am I not on the bed?"
Well, I showed up a day late. I missed the train in Italy because of Lufthansa and their customer service.
We should talk about the food that we've eaten and how we just sit down and eat a giant pile of salami, olives, and cheese, and then just talk about stuff. We should have recorded all of it because there was probably 12 hours of sheer genius in there.
Yeah. But the food has been freaking immaculate. Every time it's like a dish that I got when I was a child. You know, my dad would make food just like that. That pasta is like right on point of what I used to eat when, you know, we had orecchiette bolognese today. At least I had, and you had some lasagna.
Oh, that lasagna
meat
was crazy.
It was meat lasagna,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I wasn't even sure because it just said lasagna on the menu, but it came out and I was just like, that is hearty as hell.
The fish is amazing here, obviously. The meat that we had the other night, donkey meat, which is still in the fridge. We got to fucking have that.
I did not eat the donkey meat. I love horses too much to eat any relative of horses.
Donkey is not a horse, but
I don't judge people.
But I mean, we're in Italy. You're not going to have that in the United States. There's nowhere in the United States that has donkey meat. Maybe you can find something.
We're like much more ironically civilized than most of the world when it comes to not eating companion animals who have helped us for all of human history. We don't eat dogs. We don't eat horses. We have a deal. They help us. We don't eat them.
Okay,
general strategy.
I can get on board with that.
It's like George Costanza. We have a deal with the pigeons. You know, we have a deal with the pigeons. We walk. They get out of the way. We let them shit on statues. Right? No, Seinfeld, 1992. God, I'm old. But I think we have a general agreement with dogs and horses.
Okay,
and I don't like cultures who break that agreement.
I can get on board with that, but I still have to do it.
It was delicious. First of all, you could have exchanged it with beef in front of any human.
They would never know. They would never know.
Yeah. But that doesn't mean that I wouldn't know.
Maybe I switched your order around and you didn't know.
So
I'll never be able to look my horse in the face again.
So
or your donkey, apparently.
Dude, donkeys are sweet.
Donkeys are epic. Donkeys are super dope. And again, geese also. Donkeys and geese are like protective animals because they alert to things, and like you have them in the village, and like people or animals won't fuck with your other animals.
Yeah,
donkeys will kill a fucking like dog or like mules also.
Oh, donkeys will murder coyotes.
In anything quadruped, if it's below them, they will stomp it to fucking death.
I saw like a video of like a donkey picking up a coyote and just throwing it back and forth until it died because it threatened its, you know, core area.
Yeah.
Yeah, you put donkeys out with horses and they form this weird pack mentality.
Yeah. Mm. They're protective animals. It's pretty sick. My granddad has mules and he was like house sitting a dog and the dog's just like running up and down the fence line and the mules, it looked like they wanted to straight fucking eat it. Like they were violently ready to go.
Do not realize that horses are technically the most savage animal on the planet. Like a wild stallion, it's terrifying, mm-hmm. beyond terrifying.
Yeah.
Like they will kill anything that gets in their way. They'll take on a pack of lions. Like they are murderous psychopaths.
What year did we become friends with the horse and use them as our companion to develop civilization?
The Chevelsky's pony in like Central Asia. I'm pretty sure it's the Mongolian horses.
There's a famous book that's a theory about this, like the first cave woman to figure out how to count effectively. What is that called? Legends of the Cave Bear or something like that?
I have no idea.
Maybe.
I'm messing that name up, but it's all about like the concept of the first cave person to befriend a horse and like you become friends with horses. Like there are cultures who don't befriend horses. They just beat the shit out of them until they get them to do what they want. But once again, something that's kind of unique in, at least is my understanding in the Western world, is that like dressage is about learning to communicate to your horse effectively, to communicate to a horse that you know and that you don't know. The concept of horsemanship in Europe, in European history, is super intense. Portuguese horsemanship is like some of the most beautiful interaction between man and animal that I think has probably ever existed. I'm sure there's versions I don't know about, but Portuguese horsemanship is famous, which leads into kind of Spanish horsemanship. English horsemanship is a little bit more proper and dignified, but it's still one of the core things that is in English riding or eventing is dressage or communicating to your horse with your body.
Mm.
One of the three things, dressage, definitely, stadium jumping, and cross country, which are all just like the dopest sports in human history.
And the history of Eurasia, especially Northern Eurasia, is dictated by the cultures that were able to
adapt
tame horses.
Horse faster.
Yeah, and then they would come in and they would raid through. and destroy whatever culture was the sedentary culture. And then slowly that spread and people wanted horses and horses had use case. But yeah.
Like, yeah. What percentage of the world is related to Genghis Khan? It's some crazy
it's
number.
Insane. It's like 27.
Everybody has Genghis Khan blood in them?
Not every.
Not everybody, but it's not
massive,
far off.
A massive amount of the Han Chinese and especially East Asians, which there's a lot of humans out there.
So what year was
goes all the way into Eastern Europe?
No, yeah.
He would have taken all the way to London had he not. He died and the hordes turned back for his funeral, if I remember that correctly.
What?
Which is the only reason we're not all speaking Mongolian right now.
And then they split it into different khanates, but there were multiple like Mongolian invasions after that.
They never had the separate khanates.
It was never a unified khanate under him, or it was under him, and then there was several of them.
Just like after Alexander the Great.
His generals and his sons, like his generals are just as interesting as him. Like, because they went on the same rampages and they all split up and they just went, one went over that mountain, the other one went around that mountain, and they killed every single person in their way, on the way to Russia, on the way to India. Like, yeah.
One of those interesting bottleneck things. Isn't there like a human bottleneck, a population bottleneck that they know was 70,000 years ago, but they're not quite sure why, where the breeding population was reduced down to 60, 70,000 pairs on the surface of the entire planet? And they think it was either like a volcano or an asteroid. I'm not remembering this correctly, but I always think it's interesting that there's always these isolating moments that alter the nature of the gene pool forever. And Khan was one of those guys.
Yeah, exactly. What time of history was that? Like, what can I think about like when this was happening? And
he's going to search it up because guessing dates is not my strong suit. Yeah,
my years on Genghis Khan are not great. It's really interesting to think about this stuff.
Yeah, because
it was a long time ago.
I just want to think about in relation to where we are right now. You know, how long ago?
It was during the time of Marco Polo, which puts it in the early 1400s. No, I'm way off.
Yeah.
1162 to 1227, Genghis Khan, also known as Chinggis Khan.
Mm-hmm. Chinggis Khan is basically the pronunciation of it. Chinggis Khan. That's how what's his name says it.
Yeah, so a long time ago, but think about that.
1100 to 1200? So, what is that, 1,000 years?
This guy predates Robert the Bruce.
Oh, yeah.
Doesn't he? Like, this is crazy. This guy existed before what we think of as the crucial part of Western European history. I kind of think of...
Wait, is it BC or 1120 AD?
Oh, no, it'd be AD.
Oh, no, it's AD.
Yeah.
It's definitely AD. BC... We have very little data. We barely know anything that was happening anywhere in the world in like 1162 BC. Like, we have very little. Like, the Bible is one of our best kind of conceptual records of what was going on in that time. And that's an extremely small area of the world. Like, I don't know of any information that we have in the Western world.
Think about that.
That would be 300 or 400 years before the Battle of Troy. It would be a long time.
You guys are such history buffs. I feel like such a fucking idiot.
If
you enjoy history, I mean, is that something that you do enjoy and you want to like learn more about, or is it just?
I like hearing about it. Mm-hmm. You know, when I'm listening to people talk like this. And I like to think about it in relation to what's happening now and what's going on.
Exactly.
You know, but I don't have like this viewpoint in my head to base it on.
Hmm.
But history of pants. When did we start wearing fucking pants?
I was going to do some really dope history from the Bible that I had recently come across, but let's start with pants.
No, I mean, we can go to the Bible because I'm interested in like the Kabbalion too. How much of the Kabbalion...
Well, I was going to do it in relation to history. So recently what I've been doing is taking my mom to church as a social activity for my mother.
Nice.
And there's been an examination of the book of Samuel, which leads into 1st and 2nd Kings. So there's this time in history where in the Old Testament, how do I put this? The Israel as a nation was not doing, or the Jews as a nation in the Old Testament were not doing, did not have a king. It's pre their time of kings, and they had judges, and there was all this stuff. And then there's this transition that gets us through King Saul, the tall king that they kind of just made on their own, who wasn't a great king, and that led to King David. And we still talk about that today, who led to Solomon, and we all know about Solomon's mines. But I've been sitting in church with my mother and going, how far apart are these places? And what else was happening in the world in this time frame? And looking up all the cities that are in the stories and going, my God, they're 6 miles apart.
Oh, yeah. No, the
they're
entire Bible
close.
Is
it
yeah,
takes
it's,
place
it's a roadmap
in this ultra
of,
tiny
yeah.
area. Mm-hmm. And you're like, and then they fled to this area. And you're like, oh, they fled to Philistines 10 miles. It's like up the hill to the other side of Yeste.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, this is really weird that we have this historical conceptual record
of a global kind of concept, but it's...
But it all takes place in this area, the size of the peninsula that we're on here in Italy right now, and how much we don't know about other things. But looking at that, you have to have this weird hunger for history, and that leads you to maps, and maps lead you to
maps
terrain.
Maps are everything.
And then you've got to figure out, like, how hard was it for them to run that far, and how long did it take?
Yeah.
And
geography
is history.
Human. Yeah, exactly. And once you know maps, like it's one of the things that definitely people are surprised by, or, you know, not everybody's into it, but if I meet someone from, you know, Europe or something like that, I'll always ask them, like, or anywhere, I'll ask them, where are you from? And they're like, oh, I'm from here. I'm like, no, but like more specifically, where are you from? They're like, you're not going to know. I'm like, but maybe I do. And
yeah.
if you tell
more
me,
importantly,
I'll
I'm
going to
look it up.
Yeah, and I'll learn from you what section of that country it is, and now I know more about that than I did before.
Well, now we have this magical piece of glass called a phone that goes in our pocket, which talks to outer space and tells us everything. So, like, before I came to Vieste, I looked up Vieste, and I read about Vieste, and, like, what's the population of Vieste now? Just under 14,000. Oh, well, I know some towns in Ohio that are under 14,000. And then as we're driving here, you're like, oh, it is a city on a hill. Well, that makes sense because hills are hard to run up when people want to murder you.
Yeah.
You put your house on top of the hill, so they have to run up the hill to try to stab you.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty common tactic in all of human history.
Yeah.
And if they still make it up the hill and stab you, eventually you build a wall. And then that wall, everybody inside that wall creates a government. And now we get the concept of, like, the Greek city state. Like, we all get a vote. We don't want to just listen to this one asshole tell us what to do, which is the concept of a king. Which kind of generally always goes poorly after about 2 to 3 generations. And that's Ibn Khaldun's theory of 5 generations. Ooh, do you want to do Ibn Khaldun? We'll come back to it.
Well, what I find so interesting about history, I mean, I have to do a better job of seeking it out on my own and listening to more history podcasts. But what I get interested in is, like, our notion of what God is and the same stories that have played out throughout history that are a symbolic representation of the anointed one, the healer, the one who died and rose again.
Mm-hmm.
And that is interesting to me because I think we're all, like, especially now, like this generation growing up today is growing up without a sense of spiritual connection. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I think you don't walk anywhere in the dark. I think if you made people walk home in the dark across the countryside, everybody would believe in God super fast.
Okay.
I think there is a spirituality that it's just trying to be non-conformist. Like,
that's because they're never walking around in the dark. They're trying to hedge their bets by picking, like, some weird concept, I feel like.
But I also had a hard time, like, when I was a kid growing up, being okay with going to church. I always felt weird, and, like, I didn't necessarily believe in the concept of God. I didn't like thinking that there was another place after here that was, like, heaven or whatever, or hell. Like, I didn't like
it. Well, yeah, because
I didn't like the concept of hell, obviously. Like, that seems like it's really...
Well, yeah, here's an interesting idea. Atheists don't believe in heaven or hell, which is why only what happens to them in their life now matters, which is a weird concept that kind of leads to a lot of bad stuff in history. Because if what happens now matters and only your feelings matter and there's no eternal reward or eternal damnation, you can do a lot of terrible stuff to get
you can
what
do
you
a lot
want.
Of terrible stuff if you have
right.
all of those things.
So
as well.
Religion and the concept of something before or after this is a regulating force on all of human history, because you go, well, maybe I won't burn the town on the next hill and take all their women and take all their stuff because I'll burn in hell forever. So there's a regulating force, whether it's true or not. religion is a civilizing force on all of human history that says put value on doing good things now and building things for the future. That is not a concept. As we get better and we get more stuff and every civilization becomes more successful, their interest in religion falls, and then their interest in the future falls, and then it's the whole hard times make strong men create good times create weak men create hard times. It's that cycle, but religion is a part of that cycle for most history. Hmm. Religion tells you to have kids, have a family unit, propagate the future. When religion goes down, the family unit starts to disappear. When the family unit starts to disappear, people are no longer planning for the future. People stop maintaining the roads because it doesn't really matter. They just have a party instead.
Definitely do not subscribe to that thought process. But the later Abrahamic religions, which would be Muslims and Christianity, don't really put a premium on the lives of out-group members.
Yes, they do. They're the only people in human history who do.
So Buddhists think that you should kill everybody who doesn't believe in Buddha or doesn't...
No, but they don't believe in eternal damnation for murdering your neighbor.
Well, no, your neighbor is part of your in-group.
Yeah, but Christianity, like all things, has risen and fallen over the years. But fundamentally, the tenet of Christianity is you're not supposed to murder anybody, including out-groups.
I mean, Christianity has gone up and down. It's also evolved in so many different ways over the years.
Yeah, but the core book is still there. You can just read it. That's what led to the Baptist Revolution.
The King James Bible that's been edited how many fucking times, obviously. Yep. But,
it also changed the world for the better because it created the modern public education system, because people in Germany believed that after the Gutenberg press, they printed the Bible, and the Catholic Church went down because a bunch of people printed the Bible, and then they enacted schools to make sure people could read the Bible for themselves, and it led to the entire modern world. People having a desire to read the Bible so that they could figure out what it really said, so they didn't have to go through a government organization, created a bunch of really cool stuff on accident, like the modern world, and the Gutenberg Bible led to all other books in human history and the propagation of knowledge. So
it's a reasonable proposition. You're applying a lot of thought to what other people are thinking, and
yeah, I think that's what thinking is.
I think that's hard to be certain of. Like, you may be 100%, you might be 100% right, but I'm definitely not certain that you're right.
No, I'm not 100% right, obviously.
But you might be. I'm not saying that.
I'm saying I have an interpretation, which is based on a bunch of historical stuff that we can all point to.
An interpretation. Yeah, definitely. Yeah,
but we all know what happened. The Anabaptist religion comes after Luther had his thing. So Catholic Church was providing indulgences to a bunch of rich people so that they could commit as much crime as they wanted. Martin Luther said, I don't think that rich people should be able to buy their way out of hell. So he writes his thesis. He wasn't trying to get rid of the Catholic Church. He was trying to reform it. Mm-hmm. Side effect of that is they created the Gutenberg press. They printed a bunch of Bibles. People started reading the Bible for themselves for the first time in history.
Those Christians, they created the
Anabaptists. Yeah, they all fought. Like everybody in
their
neighbors fought.
Or like...
Well, yeah, there was a German prince who the Anabaptists took over a town in central Germany inside of a walled city, and the prince tried to murder all of them, and then they read the Bible and decided to try to do a bunch of weird Bible stuff.
And then they went to church.
No, they eventually all died and were skinned alive and broken on the wheel. But
that would have...
It took 3 years, but they created the Anabaptist religion, which created the Baptist religion, which created the Protestant religion, which created America.
Anyway,
you guys have an interesting chemistry.
When I was 10 years old, so my I was born in a Mennonite village, which is a cult and subsect of Christianity. And so my mother was raised in it, and I see some aspects of religiosity that can be, you know, toxic is a word that gets thrown around, but it does have application. And at 10 years old, we were going to church, and I just told my parents, I was like, I don't really think that this makes sense. It'd be really cool if, like, you know, this wasn't a big deal for me. And my parents were nice enough to be open to that. They're like, you're still going to come to church with us because we're, you know, you're not, you're 10 years old. You're not going to, you know, do something else, but you don't have to, you know, subscribe to anything. And so I went and I worked in the kitchen and I would just make the lunch for everybody afterwards. And I would just jam out and just do whatever. And everybody, you know, had their time and I had my time. And within being, and there was a time when I would call myself a hard atheist or probably not actually, I would say agnostic, but my wife's mother passed away two and a half years ago. And the spirituality of death, her mother died and her grandmother died like 1 week later. So I ended up actually going to two Buddhist funerals, which is a very, very interesting thing on its own. But
a Buddhist funeral?
Yeah. So
is your wife Buddhist?
But the culture is Buddhist. So like the underlying, Japan is an unreligious country, but the underlying culture is a Buddhist culture. And
I thought it was Shinto.
Shinto Buddhism. Yes.
Okay.
It's an offshoot of Buddhism, but yes, you are correct. Yes. But having that experience, I mean, we talk about that she's still there watching over us, and like, I wouldn't have it any other way because you can't leave people behind. And that's a spirituality that I don't think requires any sort of God or, you know, All Father to comprehend.
The
right?
concept of God is like a, it's an interesting one because people have a different perspective on it. Like the Buddhist one doesn't look or anthropomorphize the God.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like a man watching over us, like in
It's more of a
Christianity.
Force. Yeah,
and that's the probably the one most interesting level of spirituality that I'm interested in subscribing to because it's like a relationship with you and higher levels of self-awareness. Am I right?
No, yeah, no, exactly.
Well, now we got to talk about the difference between Theravada and Mahayana Buddhism.
Well, what is the difference?
Tell me.
Greater vehicle and lesser vehicle. Buddhism, as it was originally taught, is a philosophy. The same way that original versions of Christianity were mostly philosophic in nature.
Mm-hmm.
You had the Four Noble Truths and the Eightfold Path. As it progressed east over the mountains, you got Mahayana, right? Theravada is the original philosophical version, which is only practiced in, like, I think Sri Lanka, if I'm right. I think it's only Sri Lanka that does Theravada. Everybody else does Mahayana. And what you think of Mahayana, think of it like the Catholic Church. They have a bunch of Buddhas that fill the role of minor deities. And that's when you go to temples, you see all the sculptures of minor deities. And so there is in my understanding, a greater concept of God, the Buddha himself, and then the Buddhas below him, which really take the role of, like, in Catholicism, of God and saints. That's kind of my understanding of it. So you just got to make sure it's interesting to think about these things.
No, 100%.
Because my understanding of Shinto is that Shinto is really the Japanese interpretation of Mahayana. So they have Buddhas, as you see in the statues and everything else, but then they also have combined that with an interesting version of ancestor worship, if I'm saying this right, and that is what creates Shinto as an idea. But you have practices and that type of Buddhism and everything else.
Isn't it interesting that no matter what type of genre comes about, religion, then there's, you know, Buddhism is a religion, and then all these sectors of Buddhism. Catholicism is a sector of Christianity, and there's so many different sectors that come about from one thing. Like in the steel mace
community.
Yeah, in the steel mace community, same thing. The steel mace, this tool comes out, it reemerges into this century, and there are different groups of people who like using the mace in a different way, and your mace is shit, this mace is bad, you're wrong, and it's the same kind of thing. Do you think just human beings are just we're built to do things like that?
And we're designed to have in groups that we can trust people. Like, that's how you develop a society, and it makes sense on an evolutionary standpoint, absolutely. But I think now we're in such a complicated society, and now it's a globally connected, instant sharing type of thing. I think that it complicates things considerably.
Totally. What are your thoughts on that, Mark?
I think humans will always tribe up based on geography. And I think if you turned off the power, we would all revert into tribes in a very short period of time.
Absolutely.
And having common original cultural themes will help define regions.
But
so,
in that case, though, it wouldn't be lines on a map, right? Like, we're talking geography here. We're talking, like,
yeah,
the Rio Grande
would be lines
would be,
in maps.
But what would be the maps? We're talking about a
world
without
power.
It would
be as far as you could walk from your house in one day.
But what would stop someone from coming over? Like, traditionally, cultures are divided by rivers. They're divided by mountain ranges. Like, we're talking about geography here, right?
Yeah, well, we're also talking about city-states. You have a city-state. A city-state exists on a hill. Their land is as far as they can see from the highest tower and that they can get to so that they can defend it and protect it. And if somebody tries to mess with them, they can get to the tower. And then that is what we revert to at its most basic level, that the idea of the city-state is that small area you all come up with a food, a group, you all speak the same language. Without communication and modern communication, language diverges. Italian is not what the Romans spoke. Romanian is also based on what the Romans spoke. So is Portuguese, but these are all separated by distance. And when the Roman Empire fell, they diverged based on their geography. Portugal is separated from Spain by a mountain range. So on one side it became Spanish, on the other side it became Portuguese, and you revert back to these groups.
What tribalism happens, though, is so much farther regressed than city-statehood, though.
Yeah, but you'll go from tribalism. If the power went off right now, it would be speed force vector.
Yeah.
That would be us, and we would eventually recreate.
We're actually on a hill right now. You can't see it, but we're on a pretty badass hill.
Oh my god, this is an unbelievable view. I still can't believe you wake up and it's like, oh,
incredible.
There's the Adriatic coast right there. But anyway,
yeah.
Yeah, so I think mace people, like kettlebell people, we all break off into groups based on something. Kettlebell people are all kettlebell people, but some people believe that it's power training, and some people believe it's strength endurance training. Some people believe that it's flow training. And people deviate out. Same thing happens in martial arts. If you separate martial arts into two different cities and you leave it for 10 years, you start to get two different styles. Same thing happens with circus arts. Before Instagram was a thing, circus arts in each town were different. Los Angeles was different than San Francisco circus. And Instagram started making a lot of things the same, but it made things more complex, but it didn't make people like each other all that much more.
So I'll give you the answer to the question.
Don't you think it's geared to, like, divide us to a certain degree? Like, bring you videos and different reels that are opposing viewpoints of what you feel and think purposely?
I think that some people definitely try to separate themselves intentionally because they're trying to create a brand because they want to sell some version of it. Very few people try to bring everything in and try to be, for lack of a better term, inclusive. And say that is a good idea as well. One of the famous things in like kettlebells and clubs, right? Kettlebells and clubs, you had Dragon Door and you had CST back in the day. And boy, they hated each other because they both thought that they were competing for the same market. In reality, the market was 7 billion people and they could have just had the whole market. They could have just, you know, looked for new people, but instead they decided to fight each other and trash talk each other for 10 years. So it just depends on the person. Does the person believe that other people have good ideas as well? And how do they categorize good ideas? Like, I do it based on, is it economical? How many of the core human movement patterns does it fix? Or how many does it cover? Is it infinitely variable? Anything that falls into a certain set of categories, I will say is good. I stop liking things when the people who talk about what they're selling are mean to other people.
I simply just
walk away from that entire concept because I don't want to give energy to people who are in general negative.
I agree.
I don't believe that's a good concept or a good way to live. I believe that if you have a good idea, I should say it's a good idea. And if I have a good idea, you should probably not trash talk me just because you don't like me.
Well, yeah. the whole principle of, like, originally Maui Fit and then now this Human Fit project as well is to break down those barriers within the fitness industry.
Yeah.
Like, if this is an open invitation to anybody, right? Like, we had, you know, Tac Fit people there. And anybody who would want to come, we would love to share this experience with them because we're open to new experiences and we want to progress what we're doing. And it's quite clear when somebody is not on board with that. And you just have to ask yourself, why is that not something you want to help the world, you know, progress towards?
I am always amazed when somebody can look at something like heavy club swinging or mace swinging and say, that's a fad and it'll never last. Hmm. It drives me absolutely crazy because it's the only thing that's carved into walls in every culture in all of human history.
Clearly, they've never
mace swinging,
been to a museum.
They've never looked in a museum and saw the thing that's a through line in all cultures. Mm-hmm. I was just in Thailand, and there's this giant monastery on the hill, this great Buddhist monastery. And I go up, and I'm teaching a staff club mace seminar, and I walk up, I go into the monastery, and what are the things I see on the wall? I see staff, club, mace. Mm-hmm. Oh, and I was also teaching machete, and I see machete. See the four things that I have come to Thailand to teach, and they are carved into the wall of the monastery. And I was like, well, that's pretty awesome. So I took pictures of it. And then I went to the monastery on the other side of the valley and I walked in. And what four things were on the wall inside? Mm-hmm. The same four things.
Yeah.
So nobody's ever carved a barbell into stone that I know of. Mm-hmm. But I can point to a dozen examples just in Florence of clubs being carved into stone.
No, 100%. I was just out in Hawaii, and the resort had this long haul of different art pieces, and it was a museum. It's a museum walkway, basically, and each section was a different culture. And all as you got older, all of the cultures had clubs. Like, you know, you get to the Victorian French era, and they're not. Well, I mean, they got polo clubs. Right? Yeah. Like they're literally swinging shit still, but you go back far enough and that's all there is. Like that's what it was. Like even, that was
It was containers, ways to store things, cover, ways to make things, needles and thread, cutting tools, and clubs. Mm-hmm. Clubs is like its own fundamental. Oh crap, well, I never realized clubs are its own fundamental category of human nature. I've always just put them in tools before, but I was always. They're not a subset of cutting tools, are they?
Well, so yes, exactly. So when I was when I got to the Pacific Islander section, they had all different clubs from all the different islands, and they all had different styles. And I believe it was a Tongan one, but it was a machete. It was a sharp club. And you could break people's bones with it by like sheer force, as opposed to just heavy weight.
The oar-shaped war club. Mm-hmm. Taking a wood club because many cultures lacked metal. And so cultures that had access to easily accessible metal first had the Bronze Age, then the Iron Age. We took the club, we turned it into bronze, we turned it into metal, we got sword fighting. So cultures did not have a readily available amount of surface metal that they could say harvest. Got wood-shaped clubs that are shaped like oars, which still acted as swords.
Oh yeah, to imagine like seeing rows and rows of like Samoan oarsmen coming towards your shoreline. Like
the Japanese have a whole in Okinawa. They have a whole style of using oars in combat, and they have a specific oar that is optimized for both rowing and beating people to death, which I think is amazing.
It's awesome.
I love oars. Ironically, oars show up in every culture, and every culture has a slightly different shape based on the boat, based on the specific materials that they have. And this is like the weird love of history is going in and looking at it, and then looking at what materials did they have available. Like Easter Island was once a thriving culture, and they cut down all the trees and then they couldn't make any more boats or oars, and then they all died in a horrible Mad Max apocalypse where it took years and they just ate each other. Somebody on the other side of the hill, they would raid them and eat them until they all died.
Amazing, amazing podcast, actually. Fall of Civilizations podcast.
Ooh, I want this one.
Everyone is Dark like Mark. An hour and a half or like 2 hours of just in-depth, like it's gorgeous. And
I have to do this. This is my
would absolutely love it.
I'm gonna look this up. Fall of Civilization.
Fall of Civilizations podcast.
Fall of Civilization.
It's epic. That's one of the ones on YouTube where I'm just like, ooh, honey, like this is on or whatever. It's just like, oh my gosh.
I think a lot about the fall of civilizations. I can't remember where I heard this. Maybe I originally heard this on Rogan, that the world doesn't end, like, for you one day. The world ends for somebody somewhere every day,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
And I think about that a lot, because the Roman Empire fell and the world ended for all of Western Europe for a long time. The Mongols swept across the steppe.
It really did.
The world
though.
Ended for thousands and millions of people and mm-hmm. cultures that existed up there, and it all ended for them, and it never came back, right? The world has ended thousands of times.
I think the Mongolian example is more accurate because they literally killed every single freaking human.
They killed every single living thing.
Yeah, that was an incredible point in history. Just yeah. based on the amount of death that was happening by human hands, it's probably still unmatched. Like,
oh yeah, they incredible amounts of stuff. Humans are capable of the best and worst things.
Mm-hmm.
Religion tends to be a regulating force on people. Sometimes it's not, but oftentimes it is.
But don't you think religion teaches us something else too about like the duality of nature?
Yeah.
Believing into something bigger than you.
Yes,
and
it's not all about you. It's about something bigger than you,
yeah.
and you should be part of something bigger. It's a pretty strong idea.
Yeah, and it gives us the tools inside these books all across different religions and cultures how to put yourself in a position to be one with God, enlightened. And I think that's just an example, or it's a symbolic representation of catharsis and
yeah.
getting true or getting clear on what's true in your heart and your soul and how you could play out a life of your dreams, basically. And I think that's what the fundamental nature of religion is.
Mm.
Or I mean, I don't know. What do you think?
Well, I don't know. There are some bad religions out there. Like, they had a big problem in India with, what was it? They talk about it in Indiana Jones, but I think it's like, what's the thuggy religion,
mm.
where people would be traveling on the road and you would meet up with other people and they would hang out with you for several days, and then in the night they would murder everybody and as a sacrifice.
Well, look, he grew up in a, what kind of,
my mother did, but Mennonite,
yeah. right? Of course. Like, there are religions out there that maybe, because we talked about it, and it's like, it's not all bad.
Extremely utilitarian, and they left Europe after the Anabaptist thing, and they came to America
so,
in order to live a more pure life where they live closer to the earth.
And you said they were workers.
The history of the Mennonites is actually really, really interesting because my family comes from the Ost Mennonites, which are the East Mennonites, because some of them did come straight over when they were
related
when they were
to the
expelled.
Amish. They all left in different waves.
Yeah, but the Ost Mennonites are actually really famous historically because they settled the Donbass region of Ukraine, which is automatically like one of the best growing regions of the world. This the largest section of black earth on earth. You can grow, like, it's, that's why it's the breadbasket of Europe. But they settled there and they were so industrious and they just kept to themselves and produced wheat for whatever government existed, that even during World War I, when Germany was at war and invading Russia, the Russians left this huge population of Germans in the center of their country and were just like, hey, you guys are non-aggressive. If you want to just keep doing what you're doing, please don't stop. And it was only once the Communist Revolution came around that they were expelled.
Oh, is this Hobodomor? Hobodomor?
Yeah. It's related to that. Like, I mean, yeah, the vilification of the kulaks by the Russian state. The kulaks are the rich farmers, and so the Mennonites would have fallen exactly into that category, exactly. The history of my family, which I only found out later, was that they fled from Ukraine through Sweden to North America, and then in this tiny town in Manitoba where I was born, you legally could only settle there if you were of German descent. So they actually lied. My great-grandpa, who lived to be 103 years old, told us this. He's like, yeah, actually, we're Swedish, and we changed our name to Ham because Ham's a German name, and we wanted to live in town. And, you know, and they were, you know, practicing Mennonites, of course, but even, I think the town legalized liquor like 5 or 6 years ago.
I can't believe they've done that. It's still happening. There's like these sections of Mennonites. You have the Canadian Mennonites. So there's some in
Mexico. There's a lot in
some
Mexico.
In Mexico.
Yes. Well, I mean, Mexico is where all these cults go once they get kicked out. Like, I mean, you know, the hopscotch. It's once you get kicked out of northern North America, you go to Mexico because Mexico allows for these ultra compounds. Because there is plenty of space in northern Mexico. There's like a lot of space in northern Mexico.
So hot, though.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Mennonites are definitely an interesting dynamic. And people who have heard of them have almost nothing bad to say about them because they just keep to themselves. And they pass their money down. There's actually that section of Manitoba has the highest percentage of millionaires of the entire country because they just pass the money down generationally and they just buy farm equipment.
Yeah, they just buy farm equipment. The Mennonites that I've come across in Colorado have massive amounts of land and the best farm equipment ever.
Mm-hmm. No, they're rock stars.
Money on. Like, they're like the rock stars of farming. Yeah. They're like so industrious. But ironically, they kill cattle at a super high rate because they don't understand the difference between virus and bacteria. Because they don't have the education level to understand that they're different things.
So at least, again, with the affluence that came from the farming in this region, again, they legalized liquor like 5 years ago, and then they literally had a gay pride parade like the year after that.
Oh, wow.
Like, they've developed, and when you tell people that to who know what Steinbeck is, like, they're literally just like, it blows their mind.
Yeah.
But it's definitely changed, and I think the affluence and, so basically every
are
single
they educating
tire.
Educating above? Because like in the Colorado Mennonites, the women aren't educated above
I think
fifth grade, and I think the boys aren't educated above, say, eighth grade.
So that would be like a sect.
Yeah.
They have public schools in this area. Right. Like, maybe, you know, there are other cults. So, like, Hutterites are in that region as well. And those are the ones where they have to wear the weird shawls, and they are closer to,
are
like, Amish. Yes, yeah. And Hutterites are, like, super closed off, like Mennonites.
Yeah, Mennonites
parlay.
Yeah, they parlay,
but
they don't engage with the English. Do they call them the English as Mennonites do, or is that only the Amish who say that?
Well, so the interesting thing about Central Canada is there's freaking nothing there. So when you drive through, it's a German town that was settled by Germans because they showed up there with wagons, and nobody ever came there after because you're in the middle of nowhere. And then, you know, 50 miles away, there's the French town where the French wagons went, and they, you know, fight each other over whatever they're doing. But there was no like go-between, basically, because it was basically all the sections of Europe were just represented there. And then the English were farther into British Columbia. British Columbia has a much more English twinge to it, but the central part of Canada is like French and German in these weird little pockets, and they all hate each other, and it's hilarious.
groups,
yeah, but it's like we're going back to like you know, the mace community and the kettlebell communities and how they kind of just cipher off into their own little thing. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, what we're trying to do here at Human Fit in Vieste, Italy, and the, you know, the future events that are going to happen is teach a unique style of training. And also what I'm hearing you say, and what I think is a common theme between all of us here, is to kind of unite all brands and mm-hmm. talk about how these protocols are useful for specific goals and outcomes. There's not just one way that you can be that you should be a diehard. I mean, do whatever you want.
Yeah.
But like,
I think that we're accidentally creating a new version of like CrossFit. Like, CrossFit was based on Olympic lifting, rings,
mm-hmm.
med ball, and track. Right.
We're creating real fit. Okay, it's real fit.
I don't know if we want to call it real fit, but
I do like
the word human fit,
yeah,
because we have lifting and carrying with kettlebells. It's pure mathematical progression.
Mm.
We have club swinging. We have hydro core swinging, which is essentially a sexy bag of grain that you'd be slinging around if you were in the Eastern Europe wrestling community. It's very similar to the Bulgarian bag.
Mm.
And we have a version of Olympic lifting now with
Landmine
University.
Yeah.
And I think that if you took all of these ideas, you could turn this into a core overall idea. I'm just going to do that. I'm going to turn it into a core idea.
I think that's what we are doing like right now. Yes,
yeah.
Exactly.
The only thing I was lacking talking about was Landmine. But I'm now going to be on a quest to further understand landmines.
Do you know Alex? I'm so glad you came to this.
Are you tight with Alex? Do you know him or?
No, I've never met him.
I think he's a cool guy.
Maui Fit, but I never met him. But
I think you guys talking would be very interesting because you guys are both like crazy smart, and I think there's a lot that you can cover and talk about, like, you know, a little bit deeper, like the importance of this protocol and like what we can do moving forward with it and how we can help educate colleges and high schools and different trainers, different gyms. You know, Alex is going all over the place, all around the world. I mean, look
This should be in every commercial gym because it takes up way less space and costs less money. Along every wall, you could stack up 50 landmine stations and say a 4x8 or 4x9 square, tape it off. And it's way less expensive than squat racks, deadlift racks, or anything like that.
Any of that big ass equipment.
You could, you go to a gym, they maybe have one deadlift rack. If you go to like a fancy gym, like Onnit has a big pile of them. You know,
there's definitely a push to have 10 of them or something.
But you could stack 50 landmine stations in the same space.
Yeah.
And get so much more out of it. And have it be communal training on a clock. Everybody moves together. Everybody breathes together. I think it would accidentally create a better sense of community the same way that Mace accidentally creates a sense of community. If one guy starts doing Mace 360s, everybody faces the same direction and they do them on the count. Everybody moves at the same pace. Everybody breathes at the same pace. Now we're back to creating it's another way to create unification in human movement and human breath, which creates unification in human groups. Am I saying that right? Did I say that right, Gino? I think I said that right.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
To somebody. Well, when a group is unified with same core values and are taking care of their mind, body, soul, I feel like then they're more capable of prospering through the next generation, whatever that is, right?
I believe so too.
The next big hurdles that they might face, you know, and what they're able to accomplish will be a lot more if they're all on the same page, mentally, physically, emotionally, and if they're all aligned to a bigger goal that's beyond them.
So much of this is about like personal growth, right?
Yeah.
That's what we're pushing people towards.
Yeah.
And that requires you to step back from like the whatever life you're living. You have to be able to look at that and find the spaces, because you know, maybe you don't have, you think you don't have time or whatever it is, but if you want to grow, the only way is to actually take that step back and begin the process. And so we're just trying to reach as many people as humanly possible, and again, make it accessible and be friendly. And And if they already have some knowledge of fitness, we're not going to discard that. We're going to build on top of that. And that's the important thing that we're all, as coaches here to do. And it's beautiful in our community, 100%.
Yeah, it's very rare for a bunch of disparate fitness communities to come together at the same event and all honestly and openly share ideas and try to find the common links between them and not find the ways that we can stab each other in the back or try to destroy the other guy. You take what's good, we Bruce Lee it. We take what's good, we leave what maybe not be so good, and we make everything better all the time. Mm. Radical self-improvement. And radical honesty, is that, can you say that? That's a thing, right? Radical honesty and trying to do better and be better and organize better and better things to help more and more people.
Yeah, fun too.
Yeah.
On top of it, it's so fun.
Well, and that is so much of the training that we do is meant to stimulate your brain. Like, people enjoy having their brain stimulated. That's why they are on social media. Like, we just have to trick them into understanding that there are other ways to enjoy life with movement and with health and with, you know, martial arts or whatever it is. These are things that enhance your life, and they're so disconnected from our everyday life.
Well, we got to get into our bodies, right? Mm-hmm. We got to figure out and find new ways to get into the body and understand what's going on in there. And movement is the best way to do that. And if you're not doing that, and if you're young and you're listening to this and you're addicted to your phone or gambling or porn, there's so many ways that people are addicted to sex. They get into their bodies in like these incoherent ways that could ultimately become destructive. So, you know, I'm glad that I've spent so much of my time in my life the last 15 years just in this field and helping people work on their fitness goals and understanding what that is. And throughout that process, it's forced me to understand or see, search out, like, what is fitness? What is lifelong and health performance?
Right? What is that? Large helicopter above us right now.
I was just thinking you're spitting me off into another direction.
Good.
Here.
Go ahead.
Everything that we're doing here relates back to Buddhism in this weird way, that it's all related to mindfulness. There's no mindless training here. Kettlebells, you have to be mindful of. Clubs, you certainly, definitely, 100% have to be mindful in order to practice it. By taking up the practice of kettlebells or clubs, you will accidentally become more mindful in everything you do, or you will find it you unable to progress. But there's almost no way to fail to become more mindful with any type of regular program. Landmine is mindfulness. You have to focus on your position the same way that you would focus in, say, Pilates reformer class. It's just now a super hardcore monster building version of Pilates done with a barbell. Hydrocore, you have to be mindful. And that's the thing that separates it from everything else. Most fitness is mindless. You get on a treadmill at the gym and you watch TV. You're checking out, you're not checking in. You get on a machine, you can't drop it on your face. You're just, it is mindless exercise. You can talk to your friend, you can be on your phone. It's not mindful. And this is a core concept in humanity. Most things that focus on self-improvement in some way are things that are trying to help you be mindful. It's one thing to tell people to be mindful. It's another thing to give them a plan to be mindful. And then this relates all back to the ideas of yoga, which spring from Jainism and then eventually into Buddhism, is you yoke the body to yoke the mind to yoke the spirit. You start with the body, you get it on the same page, you do something that forces you to be mindful, then that helps you be more mentally focused, to have a clear vision of what you want to do in life and in the world.
Yeah.
And then you take it a step above that. And then that might eventually turn into an understanding of spirituality or of trying to be a better person. If you want to think of it just at its most basic level, be a good person, live a good life. Don't do anything shitty to other people.
Eat good food.
Create, and also not just don't do anything shitty to other people, but add value to them.
Add value to them.
So this brings me to another thing. So we're working on our bodies. We're working on essentially our nervous system, understanding whether we're in fight or flight, if we're in rest and digest. And if we are working on ourselves, we know when we're in fight or flight, and we know what we can do to get ourselves back into that rest and digest place. So that being said, we do this regularly. We are connecting. I like to think that during my meditations and during my flow training, I feel I'm connecting to something bigger. But then you throw a psychedelics into the mix or like just holotropic breath work, and we can experience non-ordinary states of reality, which we all have done that. Let's talk about what the fuck that even is. And I mean, it's really unexplainable to me. Like, I've always been like blast off into another space, whether it's doing mushrooms or LSD and feeling all sorts of weird feels, like everything kind of is one thing. And you know, how can you explain your non-ordinary states of reality and how that is beneficial to how you live your life in this third dimension?
I think, can I talk about staff fighting here?
Sure.
How do you relate staff fighting to non-ordinary states?
So meditation is one of the classic ways in all of human history, specifically laid out in a concept from the Buddha. And the meditation, different types of meditation run through all the major versions of Buddhism. And those versions of meditation are people attempting to achieve higher states of being by being more mindful. Am I covering that right? Did I say that right?
I think so.
Okay. I have been attempting to organize a way to force people into a meditative state the way that I think the human brain may have first evolved to do it. So normally you have seated meditation, And seated meditation is attempting to create such a great amount of stillness that you can transcend to higher planes. Rough approximation of what it really is. The problem is, in the modern world, we are so still already that the inverse should be the path forward. We have to force ourselves into higher, more focused states by removing our inability to be still.
Fair enough.
Okay, fair enough. Okay, how do we do that? I am trying to find ways to force people into higher states of being by forcing them out of their frontal lobe, essentially, in their thinking mind, and putting them into flow state for real. Flow state gets a word that gets thrown around a ton yeah. in the modern fitness world. It's a great buzzword. It ranks right up there with synergy, right? In the 80s,
yeah.
right? It's essentially the same thing now. But flow state is a real thing. And I think that there is a way to force people into it by doing things like staff drills, where they have to observe, orient, decide, and act for a long enough period of time that they then transcend out of their forebrain and into actual higher states of consciousness. And I think that this is a through line through all of human history that you see pop up again and again, specifically in things like Shaolin or in Wudang Mountain martial arts, where half of the practice is seated meditation and the other half is violence in extreme environments.
Yin and yang.
I think that it's been left out, and I think that we should bring it back in a time-controlled, economical way that's accessible to the modern person.
So 21st century way.
Yeah, you don't have to go live on Wudang Mountain or at the Young Forest in order to accomplish it and live in a stone room and train for 12 hours a day and get up at 5 and run 5 miles up the mountain and, you know, bear crawl all the way down. I think that we can do this in a shorter period of time if we just design harder. Mm-hmm. That's kind of me.
What are your thoughts on none? He gave me a good answer there. He didn't really touch on higher states in the sense of psychedelic states and obviously a flow, being in a flow state can obviously be very beneficial because, like you said, you're getting out of that thinking brain, getting yourself into more of a just getting outside of your body and watching whatever it is take over you. Like you see musicians, comedians, you know, whoever, they just do it. They, mm-hmm. Singers, songwriters, people, athletes, they just get into that zone and mm-hmm. they're out of their body and they're just letting something else take over them, the 100%. Muse, right? So
that's something that I definitely experienced. Once I was introduced to the concept of flow as a demystified thing, not an abstract concept, but just the series of steps that your brain already knows to do, and you can stop thinking about it on a second to second level. I was able to look back and realize all the things that I truly love were things that put me in some form of flow state, like playing hockey or something like that. It is a chemical response because fighters and I'm sure athletes as well, there's the fight response, right? Like the first, if you're sparring with somebody who's actually a fighter and you hit them just a little bit too hard, you've now awakened something chemically. Like they now have a rush of adrenaline that is putting them in a different world. And so when I, playing hockey would be my example. And if somebody hits me, it wakes something up. And for the next 2 minutes, however long I'm on the ice, there is literally nothing that can stop me. And I'm feeling the puck. There'll be five people there all trying to accomplish the same thing, which is get control of this, little object. And I just come in and I see it. And I see the next move. And then we're already on to the next one. And knowing that kind of classifies as flow is really interesting to me. But yeah, it also
definitely classifies as flow. You just 100%. Made me look at hockey in a whole new way.
I just thought I went insane. And my dad, who's always my coach, he was like, bro, when you get people should hit you more, we would win more games because you literally go insane and I touch everybody. And and I don't even think about it. I get off the ice and the adrenaline kind of goes down and it's like a normal game again, but it's addicting. It's just okay, now I'm awake. Now we're playing a game. let's go.
To close this out, I think, you know, we'll just challenge everyone to figure out ways that they could put themselves into a flow state or put themselves in position to try to begin to get in that flow state. And I think it takes consistency every day, being in the same place at the same mm-hmm. time, doing the things that you have to do in order to whatever, you know. So that being said, let's just challenge people to get into their, figure out ways to get in their own flow state. What's your favorite thing about the HydroCore?
Favorite thing about the HydroCore?
This is a trick question.
It's so simple. You just fill the bag with water. That is what
you put the water inside the bag.
You put the bag inside the bag.
All right. Thank you very much, Mark Wildman, G Money Mustache, Gareth Ham.
Thank you.
That's the Danny Cole Podcast.
Thank you so much for tuning in. That was the episode. An amazing time hanging out with Gareth and Mark Wildman. I look forward to doing it again. Make sure to follow Mark Wildman on YouTube and on Instagram at Mark Wildman. Make sure to follow Gareth Ham at G Money Mustache on Instagram. Those two are always together shooting content, hanging out. Amazing guys. Very fortunate to have met them and hung out with them as much as we did. If you resonate with any of this information on the podcast, make sure to share it with somebody that you love. Like, subscribe, comment. The Danny Cola Podcast. Look for more episodes here to drop weekly. Make sure to follow my Instagram @DannyColaFitness. Thank you so much for